The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
Kei aku nui, kei aku rahi, kei aku whakatamarahi ki te rangi i tēnā koutou katoa. Nau mai ki te hōtaka o Nair. E whai ake nei, ka piri mai a Te Wehi Wright ki te kōrero mō te kura kaupapa Māori me Te Aho Matua. Kia ora everyone, Te Kuru here. In this episode, we'll be joined by Te Wehi Wright, graduate and advocate for kura kaupapa Māori, as we discuss the ongoing pakanga with the Crown. Kia mau tonu mai. In 1867, the Native Schools Act ensured that English was the only language taught in the education of Tamariki Māori. This was part of the annexation of Aotearoa by the Crown and is one example of the many injustices inflicted upon Māori which saw our land and language forcibly removed from us. The education system, as one of the institutions of the state, was not built to provide Māori with equity. Its founding purpose was to do the opposite. But Māori have resisted, despite over 200 years of attempted annexation, and in the face of annihilation, Māori have endured. Kaupapa Māori education has been at the core of that resistance, and traditional kaupapa Māori education movements like Te Kōhanga Reo, Kura Kaupapa Māori, Kura Āiwi, and Wānanga Māori were developed by Māori as Māori solutions for Māori futures. There have been many wins in the ongoing battle with the Crown. Te Kura Kaupapa Māori o Hwani Waititi was the first Kura Kaupapa Māori established in 1985. Since then, over 60 Kura Kaupapa Māori have been established around the country. However, the education system and successive governments have made decisions that have negatively impacted both Kaupapa Māori education and te reo. The consequences of those decisions are still impacting whānau today. In 2013, there was an attempt by government to introduce national standards, and although this was scrapped by Labour, it's an example of how rangatiratanga over Te Aho Matua, the curriculum, and the way Kura Kaupapa Māori operate is still open to being attacked. Kura Kaupapa Māori have proven to be more effective for breeding Māori excellence, but inequity remains in funding, infrastructure, workforce, resources, and late last year, Te Runanga Nui o ngā Kura Kaupapa Māori lodged an urgent claim with the Waitangi Tribunal. It comes off the back of a 2019 report, Our Schooling Futures, commissioned by Minister for Education Chris Hipkins, that recommended an autonomous governance body is formed to support Kaupapa Māori, which includes the educational organisations currently recognised as Kaupapa Māori. Kura Kaupapa Māori and other Kaupapa Māori education providers want autonomous governance. This is one of the main points of the claim by Te Runanga Nui. However, Associate Minister of Education Calvin Davis has ruled out the option of an independent authority and is conducting a review process with an independent group called Te Pairoa that will inform the introduction of new legislation next year, which he says will restructure and reshape Māori medium education. Minister Davis has said there would be a parallel pathway for Kura Kaupapa Māori and other Kaupapa Māori education providers in this strategy, but Kura aren't down with it. Te Matakahuki, which is a group made up of Kura Kaupapa Māori, Kōhanga Reo, Puna Reo and Wānanga Māori, have not engaged in the review process. They don't agree to being lumped in with Māori medium education providers like Rūmaki in mainstream because they are fundamentally different and are not part of the mainstream education system. Te Pairoa has this month released findings from its first review in which it recommends that Minister Davis, as an agent of the Crown, present an apology to Kaupapa Māori education providers for failing to provide adequate support over the last 35 years plus. There are recommendations to make new legislation which will reshape policy that Kaupapa Māori education providers currently feel constrained by and to facilitate better pathways for whānau Māori to engage in Kaupapa Māori education. But the crux of the issue remains, and that is a battle for control where Kura Kaupapa Māori want tino rangatiratanga over Te Aho Matua and the way they do things, whereas the Crown has its own plan. And so today we'll be talking about Te Aho Matua with our manuhiri Te Wehi Wright up next.
Ooh,
No mai hoki mai, I'm joined by my co-host Mediana Johnson and Leonie Hayden. Tēnā kōrua.
Tēnā koe hoa.
Tēnā koe.
And we welcome to the panel Te Wehi Right of Ngā Ruahine, Ngāti Rangitihi, Ngāti Kahungunu ki te Wairoa, Ngāti Wenuku Kōpako me Ngāti Whakaue, who is a graduate and strong advocate for the Kura Kaupapa Māori movement. Te Wehi, no mai.
Tēnā koutou.
So Te Wehi, what is Te Aho Matua for you?
Yeah, start with the easy questions, I guess. He kaupapa nui bau ke roto tonu pia I te ingoa, te aho matua. I think we're quite fortunate that when we, the way that we were raised, as there wasn't really a separation in terms of te aho matua and how it was applied. So te aho matua in itself is probably a collection of core principles that derive themselves from te ao Māori. They're not the only principles of te ao Māori, but that's where they originate. And so te aho matua, it's an ethos, a way of life, without sounding a bit culty. It was just really, you know, people talk about te whāriki or the key components or principles that they were lucky enough to be guided by growing up. And for us, that's what te aho matua was. I guess the exception for us was that it wasn't just at home, but it was something that was also supported and grown in kura as well. So, so that for us, that's what it is, bro. It's an outlook, it's a perspective, but it's sort of like that Ki Te Reo Pākehā, they call that northern star, that guiding, those guiding principles and core values that have really helped shape us.
What makes it different from other value-based educational programs? What makes it different from mainstream? I guess that's what non-Māori and Māori who aren't involved in the kaupapa, we're really trying to paint a picture or provide insight into what makes te aho matua so special.
It's easy for me to just say te aho matua is what makes it different, right, when we're looking at it from an educational framework point of view. But the biggest thing that I, as someone that has been fortunate enough to be brought up in this particular kaupapa, it's the commitment not just by the kura but also by the whānau. I think we talk about the analogy of the village raising a child, but I think in this instance for us it was the village raising the village. Whereas a lot of our parents te kuru, you know, they were, if they weren't the reclaimers of their whānau in terms of te reo Māori or tikanga Māori, they were second generation. So we're still trying to figure out what that means and what that looks like in a contemporary time. And so having an entire community of people that were have either already figured out what that looks like or people that are all trying to determine that for themselves is probably what made te aho matua a little bit different. Makes it different from any other pathway, right? It's not your conventional, drop your kids off at 9 o'clock, pick them up at 3 o'clock, and they're going to learn their numeracy and their literacy. It's actually about bringing your kura, before you send your tamaiti to kura, there's a component where the kura comes in and talks to you about te aho matua, about this kaupapa, and about the commitment that you have. It's not about the commitment to te aho matua, but it's essentially the commitment to your child, right? Like, the expectation of developing our children doesn't just fall on the kura between the hours of 9 to 3, but it's actually, you know, there are things that that the whānau, the most important parts are the commitments that the whānau gives. So that, for me, is probably what makes it different, is actually it's not exclusively, so te aho matua isn't exclusive to this kaupapa. Like I said, te aho matua is a collection of tikanga or principles that have been brought together and put into an educational framework. But the real difference is actually the inherent belief that ko te kura hei kāinga, ko te kāinga hei kura. The kura must be like a home and the home must be like a kura. Noting that the real fruit of this kaupapa is when both of those things are working in tandem.
Te aho matua is recognised as an educational framework now, but I can't imagine that it was easy to have that framework recognised by, say, the Ministry for Education. When was that framework officially recognised by education in Aotearoa?
It was gazetted in the Education Amendment Act 1999, ki taku mōhio, or 2000. But te aho matua, I mean, it's not like it was just created, right? Like I said, he aho no ngā mātua tūpuna. But in terms of how, when it was imbued into some sort of educational framework, that was by Katerina, Te Hingangaroa Smith, Linda Smith, some of the greatest kaupapa Māori minds in the world got together at a hui in Raglan. And I think this is also part of the uniqueness of this kaupapa. the real story of the, I guess, the origins of Te Aho Matua come from Katerina Mataira, and Te Hei Koko was the one that was holding the pen. And it was almost like it was written overnight. And she said that it was written by her own tūpuna, or one of her own kaitaki. And that was, no, that's a kōrero for another one. But this is, yeah, this talks to the spirituality of this particular kaupapa. Mm. And so that made it even harder to try and put something like that as conceptual of the, as Te Aho Matua into some sort of legislative structure or framework. And so what they ended up doing was they put it into the Gazette. So they referenced Te Aho Matua in section 155A of the Education Amendment Act. And then Te Aho Matua was expanded and explained in the Gazette. But to answer your question, Leonie, it still hasn't fully been recognised. And right. I think that is really where we've ended up, right? Because although there is a statutory reference to Te Aho Matua in the Education Act, and then there's also reference to Te Runanga Nui as the kaitaki of Te Aho Matua, and I guess in that instance, the recognised partner of this particular framework, there's still been a huge struggle to have it formally recognised as a formal curriculum, as a formal framework, or as a legitimate pathway for tamariki Māori. Mm.
Do you think part of that, Raru, is the fact that it is a values-based education system? Because, you know, mainstream schooling doesn't really teach you values, right? You go, you learn your maths, your English. Is that one of the raru, but also, you know, one of the benefits of Te Aho Matua and that framework?
Yeah, I think it is. I'd struggle to probably put it down to that one thing in particular, because there's a whole range of things. But I think the conflicting worldviews is definitely something that probably influences a lot of the narratives around this conflict. And it's a philosophy, so Te Aho Matua is a philosophical foundation that is very concept-based, values-driven, but it's also the metrics and the measurement or the outcomes of this particular kaupapa are probably the hardest thing to grapple, because it's not about NCA levels 1, 2 and 3. It's not about numeracy and literacy, right? It's about growing. And I think Te Kuru had mentioned it in his intro about breeding, but it's not, Te Aho Matua doesn't breed. Te Aho Matua acknowledges that excellence already exists. It's just a kaupapa to help grow that. And then in terms of Māori excellence, it's not about predefining what Māori excellence is, but it's about equipping tamariki with the awareness, with the skill sets, with the belief and the confidence to determine what that looks like for them. What is excellence for me? What is excellence for Tiwihi? I may have finished kura from a mainstream and an orthodox perspective in terms of got my NCA and UE, but I might not have wanted to go to university, which is all good, because that wasn't the excellence that I was striving for. So that's essentially what this kaupapa is trying to do, is build and educate a generation of Māori who are able to determine their own paths and their own futures.
What are some of your most valuable lessons, do you think, as a raukura of kura kaupapa Māori? And what does that even mean to be a raukura of kura kaupapa Māori?
It's hard, bro, because like the most valuable lessons about that I've probably got from kura kaupapa Māori, I'm only learning as I've left, right? Because it's not until you kind of leave that you start really understanding and really appreciating the privilege that we had to be raised in that particular kaupapa. Mm. And a little bit whakahihi, because whakahihi in the sense that all Māori deserve to feel as cool as I do about being Māori.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can 100% say that it was because of the upbringing that I had. Yep, going to kura kaupapa Māori was part of it, but actually bringing my whānau in on that whole journey as well is probably what made me realise, fuck, this is mean. Mm. And so that's probably what, for me, is one of the biggest, I don't know if it's a lesson, but one of the greatest things that I've come to appreciate about our particular upbringing. And then also speaking to the importance of whānau. We're kind of going through it with my daughter at the moment, where, you know, at kura, not only are we worrying about the curriculum, but you know, the kura also has to worry about how we're getting our tamariki to school. So we're talking about arranging buses, we're talking about arranging vans. And then, you know, just in the last couple of months, we've had vaccination clinics, we've had to fight for rats. You know, so the kura, I think I mentioned that before, but kura kaupapa Māori he tauranga atete, or to side of resistance against the institutions of state, which is essentially one of the institutions of states that really gave rise to colonisation. And we're still doing that now. So it's not just about kura. It's not just about educating our kids, but it's actually about growing an entire community of Māori who are aware, politically, emotionally, but at the same time are able to navigate all these different spaces.
Mm.
You can see why the ministry or various other government agencies are scared of this, because as you say, it's a site of resistance. But on the other hand, the results speak for themselves. I have never met a kura kaupapa educated adult that wasn't productive, smart, an amazing advocate for their community and their whānau, you know, confident in who they are in the world. It must be like really hard for like the ministry to get their head around that, you know, there is now a generation and a second generation who have these skills as adults that were not provided to them by a mainstream education. I get why they don't know how to marry these worlds together because they don't understand.
Yeah, and I actually think that's the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is they're trying to marry it.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to say is, no, you don't actually have to.
Yeah.
We don't want you to try and stress yourself out by trying to figure out how we're going to make this work.
Yeah.
What we're actually wanting is for you to just let us do it.
You've already got this. The results speak for themselves.
And it's not just about kura kaupapa Māori aho matua, but it's more, you know, people ask me, you know, and we talk about, I mean, the buzzword at the moment is co-governance, but we talk about what are some examples when Māori are able to lead Māori outcomes, Māori solutions, Māori inputs, Māori outputs, you know. And so kura kaupapa Māori to me is, and I proudly say this as a product of that movement, as of this kaupapa, is an example of that. And we know that if we can empower Māori communities to do the same in other spaces, that's where the magic happens. Mm. I'm a little bit different to, so my parents and Tikuru's parents, our whānau, committed themselves totally to this kaupapa. And 30 years on, it's still the same group of people, which tells me, you know, 30 years on, the same issues and same, I guess, institutionalized thinking is still being one of the biggest barriers. So that's probably where I come in, right, as the next generation down, my siblings and I, Tikuru and them's age, and then hopefully we can just keep pushing that and keep pushing that and keep advocating for that. It's not even advocating for the movement. My thing is we're advocating for tamariki Māori. One of the biggest misconceptions, and we still hear it today, is, you know, around English, around educational statistics and all that kind of stuff. But those narratives, they're slowly being kind of unpacked and really quite quickly countered as these generations grow. And now we're allowing that to really deter us from the key here is just the ko te tamaiti.
Mm. Mm. You mentioned that, you know, it's the same whānau that is still driving this. How do you bring more whānau in and convince them or encourage them to see the value in kaupapa Māori education?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, because as fantastic as kura kaupapa Māori aho matua is, and I'm biased because I'm obviously from that kaupapa, majority of Māori still go to mainstream.
Mm.
And so why? And I think that's a big question. And I think that's the main part that the government's, you know, that's the stance that they hold on to. You know, as cool as this kaupapa is, actually the majority of Māori are here. And I think there's a couple of things that really drive that. And the misconceptions is huge. There's two things to me. There's a lot of misconceptions around kura kaupapa Māori aho matua. And then there are still fragments of trauma and barriers to things like total immersion that really deter whānau from being able to take that step, right? It could either be a reminder of their inability or the lack of opportunity that they had when growing up to speak te reo Māori. And so that's a really huge intimidation for whānau is actually, oh, but I can't speak Māori. I won't be able to engage or take part in my child's education. I agree with that. I mean, I just talk about whānau being one of the most important components to te aho matua. But what we were fortunate enough, so mum and dad, they're second language learners, and it was through the kura movement that they actually learned how to speak Māori, because we saw that as one of the biggest barriers. And so kura actually are starting to facilitate night classes for their parents.
I know a few kohanga reo that are doing that as well.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. One, we need to be a little bit better at breaking down some of those stereotypes and some of those misconceptions.
What are those misconceptions, Tuihi? What are some of those?
a big one, bro, that we get a lot is probably around the notion of elitism. There is probably a misconception based, and I think it's driven by there are a generation of people who are confident in themselves, who can deliver messages with conviction, and that can be seen or portrayed as being a bit whakahihi. And I get it. There is a process that we need to go through in terms of how we get our messaging right around that. But I think the biggest things around that, I think, is that there are some divisive narratives that are being drawn, not by Māori, but are being driven, perpetuated by Māori, but originating from, I guess, colonised thinking. And it's divisive in the sense that, we shouldn't be putting all of our funding to critical open Māori because that's taking funding from Māori that are in mainstream. It shouldn't be the case at all. Not this or that, right? But that constant level of thinking and divisive tactics is what's driving a big wedge between our own kaupapa when actually, for me, we need ko te mate nui, ko te kāwana, ko te karauna. It shouldn't be whether or not we take money from one kaupapa to go to another kaupapa. It's actually, you need to be funding both kaupapa adequately anyway. Which is the same broadcasting, Yoni. Okay? It's the same in all of these things. And an example, I think there's, in the broadcasting space, there's te reo Māori broadcasting and Māori perspective broadcasting, and so it needs to be a pool of money here versus a pool of money there. It shouldn't be the case. There needs to be adequate resources everywhere. But yeah, so elitism is a huge thing. But I think a lot of that is driven probably from our own insecurities that are being perpetuated by the government. I want to make sure that I'm clear here that at the end of the day, kei te mōhio, it's the government that are really driving these wedges.
Oh, and I think you nailed it there in terms of, it's our own insecurities. I know I've met kura kaupapa kids who are 16 and made me feel so, just by being so confident, they're so obviously incredibly toe with who they are, they know exactly where they stand in this world. I'm like, oh man, it's intimidating, but we can't let that hold us back. And that's not, it's being framed by others, like you say, as elitist. But actually, it's just the tihi of the, tangata Māori that we are growing and nourishing of who we could be. And that is intimidating, but it's something we should all strive for, not get put out by a.
Yeah. Oh, they're scary, rangatahi Māori these days. Watch out. But it's, it's funny because as we grow older, we can't imagine what our mokopuna might be like. They're going to be doing backflips off, waka with taiaha and doing a speech at the same time. So we've got to be ready for the revolution. Yeah, and we've got to try to bring everyone along with it, A2E.
Well, and I think that's it, bro. So one of the key things that he used to always tell us when we were growing up, is the trick to walking on water is knowing where the stones are. And every generation, your job is to unveil that next stone. So our kids can keep walking on water. And I think the other thing to that is the perception, eh? Like the difference between what's impossible and what's possible is a matter of perspective. And if our kids, as they grow, keep knowing where those stones are, they're going to be able to do those backflips that we're talking about. But, I think back to your point, it's making sure that people that whānau that are on their journey feel really empowered by it. So I totally, everything that I am and everything that I aspire to be is because mum and dad sacrificed their somewhat comfortable spaces and put themselves out there to learn how to speak te reo Māori. My partner, Tiana, is the same. She's just on that journey. And it's all about, when you are on the journey, don't let us deter you from the journey. When you do see a kura kaupapa Māori student, that's your child, right? That's your kid. And so every generation, we just keep pushing and keep pushing. So I think that's it. Like there are huge confident barriers, and we see that in our kura whānau as well. But we're probably within our own micro communities need to be better at celebrating that. But the other thing is, from kura kaupapa Māori point of view, we just need to be a little bit louder. And I think it's finding that balance between being a kumara, but actually being proud of where we've come from. And the struggles. And so, people don't really know about the statistics, the educational, the academic component to kura kaupapa Māori. They get lost in the whole concepts, and they allow the values system or the values-driven educational curriculum to deter us from the fact that, they actually do pretty good academically as well. But that's not the focus.
That's the result.
So up to sort of present day and te runanga nui opting to not participate in this review, this Te Pairoa review. Obviously, that makes sense to us that you didn't want to participate in that because you're all good and Te Ao Matua is all good and the results are there and our kids are successful and the adults are successful. But being not part of that review process, what does that actually mean for kaupapa Māori education going forward?
Te mata kāuki, not taking part of the process, isn't just about them saying we're all good. I think it's more of a reflection of the process. So now there's been kōrero coming out now that they were all invited, but earlier on, and this is probably where I don't need to check myself, but earlier on it wasn't the case. There maybe had been one or two seats allowed for them, but I always go back to what Auntie Annette said in the hearings last week. You know, she said there is no rangatiratanga in a process that was decided by, selected by, and totally accountable to the Crown.
Mm.
So, and it has nothing to do with the individuals in the group because they're awesome. But it's more about the process. And kura kaupapa Māori particularly, as well as kohanga reo, have been part of a raft of reviews and reforms over the last 30 years. For what?
Right.
You know, so that's really what it is.
Mm.
I think there's, we might fall into a trap thinking, oh, they've just kura kaupapa Māori or te mata kāhuki. No, they're the ones that are throwing their toys, always considered the problem child. But actually, there's 30 years of mistrust that's just been festered and building. And then now we've got to a treaty claim point of view. It's being flipped as if kura kaupapa Māori are the ones that aren't coming to the table.
Mm.
But actually, there's 30 years of history that's telling us, well, there's no point because we've tried to come to the table on multiple occasions.
Yeah, it's that old thing of Māori have to do the job three times better to be considered as good as, and kura kaupapa movement has done that a million times over, and the trust for that is still not there. I totally understand that.
Even how we orient our whakaaro on, you know, kura or Māori and any kaupapa have to go and meet the Crown. To me, it's the Crown has to meet us, and we've got this model of success which has been proven over, you know, decades. And the Crown are still saying, no, you need to come to us. And to me, that's fundamentally where the battle of rangatiratanga is. But maybe as a last question to wrap us up, Tuihi, a nice easy one. Why does rangatiratanga of Aho Matua need to stay within kura kaupapa Māori? Because to me, that's what it is. I mean, people might interpret it differently, but that's to me the crux of this.
Rangatiratanga has the potential as a word to really inflame a whole lot of the kōrero around it. But really, for us, it's just, we just want to be able to be left to our own devices, unhindered, untied, unrestricted, so that we're able to do what we want to, what we can for tamariki Māori.
And adequately resourced.
Yeah, so I think we use the word rangatiratanga because rangatiratanga, it wasn't given in the Te Tiriti o Waitangi, but rangatiriratanga is what was recognised in Te Tiriti o Waitangi. So what we're asking for is the recognition of that rangatiratanga under the notion of partnership that was talked to and spoken about and written about in Te Tiriti o Waitangi. So I think we could easily say, oh, this is just kura kaupapa Māori's issue. But actually, from a rangatiratanga point of view, this is all of our issue. And if we can get this right in the education component, then we can start mobilising kaupapa Māori in other spaces and trying to talk and reclaim the rangatiratanga that we've lost because of those notions of the institution of state. And I think even that, we need to be a little bit more aware about those types of things.
Aira.
Mm. Tēnā koe, Tuihi. Tēnā koe, ie rā kōrero. We could go on about this all day. It's a great wānanga. But unfortunately, e hoa mā, we have to hang it up here for the time being. I'm confident it will continue at a later date. But thank you, Tuihi, for the insightful and inspiring kōrero. We've heard many reasons why a minister, former mainstream school principal who hasn't ever taught in Māori medium can't be so stubborn about the direction that he's trying to take kaupapa Māori education in. And you've laid out many of the facts and debunked many of the myths and really just given hope and inspiration, insights into this kaupapa Māori that is he taonga ki a tātou. So tēnā koe, whai wāhi mai ki te whakatakotu i era whakaaro, mo tēnei kaupapa o tātou, he mea whakahihiko i te hirikapo, he mea hei kārawarawa, kia kārawarawa tonutia e tātou, haere ake nei. Piki mihi to our podcast manager, Te Ahe Butler, and to my pals, Mediana Johnson and Leonie Hayden, tēnā rā wātu kōrua. To our listeners, you know where to find us. We appreciate your time every week, as always. Whaia te mātauranga, hei oranga mō tō whānau. Mauri ora ki a koutou katoa.
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air and brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network. It was hosted and researched by Te Kuru Jews with Mediana Johnson and Leonie Hayden. Nair was produced by Te Aihe Butler with senior production from Jane Yee and project management from Mark Kelleher. Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.